Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. We first brought you Zachary's story in July of 2019. To refresh your memory, we will play the original episode first. If you remember Zachary's story well, you can fast forward to around the 40-minute mark where the update begins.
It's very difficult for the family and everybody. Of course, his mother is very concerned. His brothers are very concerned, you know, and all of his friends around him. He's got such a wide network of people who, you know, who have expressed if they could do anything to help us. And everybody is just, the support has been overwhelming. The more media attention that we have bringing into this particular case and scenario might raise more awareness. He's close to his friends. The people that he's known in his life, he's known all his life. It'd be hard for him to just abandon that. I mean, he would keep contact with somebody, either one of his friends, someone in his family, somebody, but just to vanish. You know, a person, I feel, would have to be under a lot of duress and very unhappy in the circumstances they were in to just walk away and just vanish like that.
I have to be very, very candid with you. The fact that he's an adult male with no ties to the community is how they phrase it. It's gotten zero to no effort. Everything that's happened, we've done. Which I understand, but it's frustrating as can be.
You know, this was his address for his whole life, 28 years. You probably have heard more, you know, from experience, but to be able to not have anything, you know, if he did want to go off the map and have nothing show up at the house, you know, no mail, no trace, it seems odd to me. Like, you would think you'd have to get some kind of health care. He would have got a job and got some kind of, just some kind of letter or some kind of reference to him still being, but it's pretty much just been letters of where are you?
On May 24th, 2017, 27-year-old Zachary Wilkes left his home in Lompoc, California, to make the familiar drive to his uncle's residence in Las Vegas, Nevada. He planned to spend some time helping his aunt and uncle prepare the family's vacation home for summer guests and also to enjoy seeing his relatives. However, Zachary never made it there, and neither he nor his car have ever been seen again. What happened to Zachary on that 400-mile journey he made so many times before and was looking forward to doing again? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 182 of The Vanished, Zachary Wilkes' story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 27-year-old Zachary Wilkes was finding his path in life. While living in his family's home with his brother, going to school, and spending his time with friends and helping out neighbors. He had worked at a local mission and knew his passion in life was giving back to his community. But Zachary wasn't sure how he planned to do that just yet. While researching this story, we spoke to his mother, Elizabeth, who shared what Zachary's kind spirit is like and what she remembers of Zachary as a child.
Zachary growing up. Zachary was my happy child. He's the middle boy of three. He, you know, was close enough to his brothers. Good kid growing up. Really close. He has friends as he's had since elementary school, and they're still would be considered best buds, and that's the person, you know, you would call Zachary when you needed something, when you needed a friend, or when you needed a ride, or when you needed a cigarette. That is him. He was that way with family, which is kind of what put him in the situation that he was in. Zachary, after high school, he went to junior college. He worked. He socialized. He was, along with my youngest son, a primary caregiver to their 99-year-old grandfather who lived with in their house with us. He was capable. He just needed a ride now and then, or just to be reminded to turn the stove off. So he did that when he was not at school. He worked on and off. He'd been off for a while. He had hurt his finger in a door. It needed to be reset, and it had to be opened up and got infected. And so he was just regaining the use of his right hand. He was a good kid. He's a man. He was everybody's help.
We were also able to talk to Zachary's dad, David, and he shared many of the same sentiments about Zachary's kind and gentle spirit, as well as his passion for serving others.
You know, as a child growing up, he was a very good child, very mild-mannered. He wasn't, I would say, a difficult child to try to raise. Of course, there's always with growing pains, you know, through adolescence, you know, there's always they're trying to find themselves and who they are. Of course, his mother and I always tried to give him the best advice and guidance going through that period. But, you know, never any incidents with law enforcement or with school officials, you know, or anything like that. He was pretty a good child, fairly good grades in school. You know, he maintained. He had a little difficulty adjusting to the middle school, the high school times, put him in charter schools. But as far as our relationships, one with another, it was always good. We found a hobby that we shared together was golfing, and we would golf, you know, and spend time alone bonding, you know, a father-son type of bonding thing. So I feel always an open relationship, talking back and forth. It was pretty easy. I didn't feel like there was anything he was hiding or trying to, you know, anything like that. It was always a fairly open relationship with us. After high school, we encouraged him to go to school, to continue on with education. But he went to work down in Santa Barbara. He worked at the Old Mission Santa Barbara for probably 2 years. And that was a work experience for him, which was good, cashier's experience and other types of things. He also was involved in doing home maintenance. Of course, one of the things that I showed him how to do was handyman work, you know, working with his hands, working carpentry work, masonry work, just all kinds of things. And he kind of took a liking to that and would help neighbors and family members, you know, if they needed help remodeling a kitchen or a bathroom or something like that. He was always there doing his best to help somebody with that. So those are the two types of things he was doing. After high school, did decide to go ahead and pursue a degree in business. And he started with that, and he graduated from a local junior college with that degree. He more got fulfillment with helping somebody who needed help. I think that was the intrinsic for him. He really liked to help people, especially those who couldn't so much help themselves. He would help neighbors out, for example. If someone, you know, had a project to do, but they couldn't afford to do it or something like that, you know, he would use his own resources and talents to help neighbors out and friends and anybody he could, really.
Zachary's parents, Elizabeth and David, had moved to the Washington, D.C. metro area. So Zachary and his brother Andrew remained in the family home in Lompoc, California, so that they could attend college. We also spoke to Andrew and asked him what his relationship with his brother was like.
He was a very good brother. We had a very good household, good family, and we were very close, me and him, up to, we were in and out in our mid-20s, and we were still close. We both lived in Lompoc, California. We were both born and raised in the same house, and we lived, you know, our entire childhood here, and we had a good childhood. We went on a lot of vacations. We were always together as a family, and we had a very good childhood. After high school, we didn't go to college right away, but we both did go to college, you know, after a few years. We were both went to charter school, so we did not go to traditional high school. But after high school, we did various work. Then eventually, we both went to community college. He was studying business, and so was I. We both kind of worked together on that. He did work at the Santa Barbara Mission after high school for several years. And then after that, he did various kind of jobs, maintenance and such. The Santa Barbara Mission is an old Spanish mission that he worked at for 2 to 3 years, where he worked after high school. And both in college and I just got accepted into a university type deal. And he was kind of struggling to just finish community college. And that kind of, I think, affected him. You know, he was a little bit disappointed in himself to say that, you know, he wasn't where he wanted to be in life yet. He probably, you know, want to be somewhere where he could do something maybe for the gay community, maybe.
We asked Andrew what he knew about Zachary's planned trip to Las Vegas and what happened the day that Zachary left on the road trip.
What he did is he planned a trip out to Las Vegas, and he told everyone he was going to Las Vegas, and he told everyone his plans, and it was very clear, you know, what he was going to do. And then he eventually, you know, packed up all his stuff, which we didn't exactly find suspicious at the time, but looking back now, it did. So he left to Las Vegas, and he was pretty normal. He, up to him leaving, it was, you know, somewhat uncharacteristic of him, but at the time it didn't seem uncharacteristic. He was real adamant about not calling the relative that he was going to see. He was going to see my uncle. And I kept telling him that he needed to call him to tell him when he was going to get there, because it kept getting later and later in the day. And to Las Vegas is about a 7-hour drive. And by the time he was leaving, he was getting there about 4 in the morning. And he refused to call our uncle, which seemed very unlike him, because he knows our uncle will worry. He didn't call, and then he left. We didn't hear from him. We thought he would get there, even though we thought he would get there very late. We still thought he would get there. And then, you know, after half a day, we thought, okay, maybe he's just taking his time.
Zachary's dad shared a bit about what Zachary planned to do when he got to Las Vegas to visit his aunt and uncle.
And then his uncle had a project to do on Lake Powell. He owns a houseboat up there, and every year he goes up and gets it ready to launch for the summer season. It's a timeshare type of thing. And there's always work to do. And typically his younger brother, Andrew, would go up there, and Philip, his older brother, would go up there. They kind of take turns. So it was his two brothers were busy at that time. They couldn't get away because of school and work and their own personal work and things like that. And Zachary was available. So Zachary had scheduled with his uncle to go up there and help this year to ready that project for the summer. It just, you know, he packed up like he was going to, to my brother's house, his uncle's house, and started off kind of late, but we thought, okay, that's not that unusual. He knows the route really well.
Zachary's brother Andrew had expected to hear from him, or their aunt and uncle, that he'd made it to Las Vegas, but he never got that call. As I mentioned earlier, their parents were 2,000 miles away in the Washington, D.C. area. So when we spoke to Elizabeth, we asked her to tell us what she remembers from the day Zachary disappeared.
He was on his way to Las Vegas to meet up with his aunt and uncle, and then they were going to go to Lake Powell and work on a houseboat. He was kind of spending the day closing up, finishing his, just the stuff that he had at home to do, and he didn't leave really early. He left later at night, but as far as everybody knew, he left under good terms. He left in a good situation. He left in a good frame of mind. He wasn't dreading this. He wasn't not wanting to go. He was good. He didn't go the way everybody thought he was going to go travel, but that wasn't unusual. The way he went is the way we went as a family all the time. He knew that he was going to be getting there early, so he had told his brother that when I get to Las Vegas, I'm going to go and, just kill some time at a casino rather than show up at Uncle Bob's house at 5 in the morning, and that wouldn't have been unusual. Even when we didn't hear from him on that Thursday, we were okay. We weren't that panicked because it's like, he probably pulled in. He's sitting in the car sleeping somewhere. He'll sleep it off and show up. Nobody saw him by Friday.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After Zachary's parents and brother realized that something was wrong, and this was more than just a road trip delay, his mom and dad immediately flew back to Lompoc from their home in Maryland, and the search for Zachary began. Elizabeth works in the wireless communications industry and was able to get some help in trying to ping Zachary's phone. Elizabeth shared some of the other things they did in the search for their son.
By Friday, after many calls and things like that, then we had his younger brother, who lived with him in Lompoc. We actually live in Maryland, my husband and I, and he lived back in Lompoc, California, which is where our family home is. And so he reported him missing. And as a 27-year-old, there's just not a lot they do. We live in a small town, and the police aren't super helpful with a missing adult because they just assume he's on a walkabout. And so we got involved. We hired a gentleman who flies a drone and who does these kind of missing persons and searches. And we had him go one route, and then we were able to get AT&T to tell us which cell tower that his last phone had pinged off of. And so then we changed routes and searched the other route. We spent several days doing that. We spent several days as a family, extended family, family friends, searching the route to no avail. Drove to Vegas several times, stopped at every substation along the way, and there was nothing. I work for a union that represents people that work for AT&T, and we were able to contact an AT&T vice president. And with the subpoena that the Lompoc police had gotten, we were able to get a little bit more information, and we were able to find that his cell phone had pinged in the same place for 5 hours. So that led us to believe that he had pulled over and had slept, but it was still in the ping zone. And the road that he went down has got a lot of treacherous areas, but the area that the zone that he was in was not. It was a lot of orchards and grapes and things like that. So if the car had gone off the road, you could have clearly seen it from the road. And again, we were there about 4 days after he disappeared and had spent several weeks there searching. When he left, he left with everything well. He was going to go spend some time on the houseboat. And after the houseboat, then he was going to come and spend some time with us here in D.C. So he had the option that if he wanted to come live with us, that was fine. So he pretty much closed up his room. He boxed up his stuff, put it in the rafters. And so a lot of people took that as that he was going to leave. You know, he was leaving. He was, but it was not an unknown trip to me. He had shared this with his dad. He had shared this with me, that he was going to be leaving California and coming here to the D.C. Maryland area. So a lot of his friends think that he went on a walkabout, but that's just not in his DNA. I mean, there was no reason for him to. There was no reason for him to go that day. You know, he lived 2,000 miles away from us. He could come and go as he pleased. He lived on his own before. We talked, we texted, we were close, but I wasn't in his business. He lived his life. Although a lot of people feel it's a walkabout, it just doesn't make sense intuitively. But at this point, nothing makes sense. You know, what kind of 27-year-old man leaves money in his bank account, doesn't max out his credit cards, had a new phone, the phone just didn't die. Your title being vanished is quite apropos for Zachary. I mean, he literally has vanished. He has not used an ATM, not used a credit card, not done anything. We have exhausted every lead, every car that looks vaguely familiar. We have YouTube videos out there. We have a website. We've spent tens of thousands of dollars looking for him to nothing. I mean, we are unable to figure anything else out. In the little community where the cell phone pinged, they've been extremely kind and extremely, I mean, you still go there and they keep posters up and they keep looking, but there's been nothing.
Zachary's father told us what he remembers from the initial days of the search for Zachary that spanned such an immense area, 400 miles of rough terrain in California.
He didn't show up. Well, we gave a little length of time, but not very much. Right after his disappearance, we started searching the roadways, the possible routes that he would have taken to reach his destination, which first destination is Las Vegas. We had Highway 1 from Lompoc to Santa Barbara aerial surveilled with a private contractor who professionally uses drone cameras. So we cameraed the road all the way. And there's a lot of places you can get off the highway there. A car could disappear in a ravine, such as that. The next step we took was the next possible route would be from Lompoc to Nukuyama to Victorville. And we also had that person scan that whole area in there. We had a suspicion that he had last phone contact in Nukuyama. So we searched the Los Padres National Forest around the Kuyama area, all the back roads with, you know, a caravan of people and aerial drones. So we searched the whole that whole area between Nukuyama, Santa Barbara, and Ventura, all those back roads. Questioned people we saw along the way. We also made contact with all of the local fire department, National Park Services in that area, and we also contacted local sheriff substations from Lompoc all the way to Victorville, and then on up into Las Vegas. So we notified law enforcement, personally walked into their substations, talked to the sergeant there in those substations, gave them flyers, let them know what we were doing and who we were looking for. So we made personal contact with law enforcement all along the way. We also notified Lompoc Police Department and filed missing person reports with them and tried to get as much, cast a very wide net. Also, we interviewed with one of the local television stations in the area that did a special broadcast for a search for that. I understand that the police's resources are limited. You know, they don't have an unlimited resource to go out and try to find everything. Based on what information that we could give them about his disappearance, I think they knew as much as we did. They may have drove down the road and looked for tire tracks off the side, but they didn't really go out and help us a lot. They were not too involved.
Elizabeth told us about the area where Zachary's phone last pinged.
So the tower is McPherson Peak Tower. It's in Nukuyama, which is a town that borders the Santa Barbara County and Ventura County border. It is up in a hill, and what it does is it has a diameter ping of about 13 miles, I believe is what it is. And although the tower's way up high in the hills, you literally can't get there any way. There's no road access to it. So what we did is we took the circumference of the circle and began the search. You know, this is when you come into this tower's, that's how cell phones go. They go from tower to tower. So we can tell from a map where the tower pings in and to when it pings out and when it goes to the next tower. There are some farm roads, which we looked at extensively. There are some county roads, which we looked at. The gentleman that drove the drone, he actually has some ATVs, and he went out with the National Park Service, and the National Park Service knew of some areas that might be suspect, might be, you know, areas of interest, but were not able to find anything. We spoke with two different game wardens in the two different counties, and they also they're on ATVs and horses. If for any reason he would have driven off the main road, which, mind you, is a two-lane road. It's a fairly well-traveled road for a two-lane road, but it's not by any means a highway, a multi-lane freeway. So the terrain up towards the mountains is, of course, mountainy, but he was driving a 1994 Honda Civic that was low to the ground. I mean, he would have gotten stuck on the first bump. There was no way that he could have driven that car anywhere vaguely off the main road.
Andrew told us about his frustrations with the lack of law enforcement involvement and interest in the beginning of the search.
It was difficult because there was, all we had was about one information about where he, you know, the route he might have took or he did take. But other than that, we didn't have any people who saw him or any kind of clues or any lead. So it's kind of a blind search. We got more input from the news, our local news, than we ever did. The police didn't do much searching. There wasn't much information to be forthcoming about, but they were honest, but they didn't really seem active in their search.
As Elizabeth mentioned earlier, Zachary was driving a 1994 black Honda Civic when he disappeared. That car has never been found, nor has Zachary's cell phone. While speaking with Zachary's dad, we asked if the car has ever been spotted, or if there's been any leads on it. This is what he shared.
The car is registered to me. So the car is registered in my name. So I keep the insurance paid on it. I keep the registration up on it. So it's an active automobile. So if anything would happen, you know, if it would show up somewhere, well, it would automatically, you know, I'd get some notification of that because I'm the owner of the vehicle.
Elizabeth also discussed having Zachary's phone pinged, and that was successful, with the last known ping being on Zachary's planned route along Highway 166. However, neither the car nor the phone were located along that highway. And although the wireless carrier was able to determine that Zachary's phone had received a text message just after 12 a.m. on May 25th, 2017, this would have been just after midnight on the day that he left. But by 1 a.m., the phone had died or been powered down. Zachary's dad shared more about the cell phone as well.
The phone is registered to me as well, me and Elizabeth, his mom. So we have the phone bill. So if his phone is used, we would see on the phone bill if it was ever used. Since the time of his disappearance, it has not been used. And when we was on the road looking, you know, around that Kuyama area and stuff, we were actually walking the roads looking for if someone would have run over his phone or if he would have smashed his phone or something, but we didn't find any evidence of a cell phone.
Some of the cases that I've covered seem to have such a clear outcome, but Zachary's story isn't one of them. There's no evidence that his disappearance wasn't voluntary, and also no evidence that it was. His family doesn't know what to think. We asked his mom, Elizabeth, what her take is on his disappearance.
I can go everywhere every day. I honestly don't know because nothing makes sense. And I think that's the hardest part for this, for me specifically, is like, I just need an answer, and there's nothing. There's no reason that I can think of that anybody would want to hurt him. But we live in a crazy world, so who knows? I want to think he's on a walkabout because I want to think that, you know, he'll have his moment and he'll be better and he'll come back and he'll be fine. But then I think about the pain he must be in. Or his need to get away. And that's even a harder thing for me to deal with as his mom. So I really don't have an answer, which is what tears us apart as a family. I mean, it's just devastating to not have really any clue or to know that there are so many people that this is happening to. It's just insane. It's just horrible. His older brother's mad. He thinks he's on a walkabout and he's angry because he's being protective of me, of what he's putting me through. His younger brother is just willing to do anything. It's like, okay, I need you to go give a swab, a DNA swab. I need you to go here. I need you to do this. And he's just on it constantly and watching him just break down because he was the one that was supposed to go to the lake and he didn't. His brother went for him. And so I think he feels a little bad. His father, he's an extremely optimistic person. He really feels that Zachary's on a walkabout and that once he finds himself and figures it out, he'll be back.
Zachary's brother Andrew shared some of his thoughts on what may have happened to Zachary that day and where he may be now.
Well, Zachary had a little bit of a unique personality and it didn't quite cohere to, we live in kind of a smaller town, and it didn't quite cohere. He kind of wanted to live in a big city. I think he kind of wanted to be out on the town, and it kind of wasn't, his personality wasn't quite what was going on here. So I think he kind of wanted to get away from this kind of small town. I was under the impression that no one was caring for him or loving for him, and that he would really be missed, I think was his impression. And so I think he thought he could do this with, and no one would really care, but obviously, you know, so many people do. San Francisco is not far. It's very close. And he's been there several times. in my honest gut opinion, is when he went out to where he was driving, you know, you drive out to the 5 highway in California, and you can either go north to San Francisco or south to Los Angeles. Those are probably two good guesses of where he probably is. I think he had bigger aspirations outside of it. You know, it's a fairly, you know, bedroom type community. It's very quiet.
Like Andrew, Zachary's dad believes that maybe he did choose to start a new life. But he also recognizes that something more sinister could have happened on the day that he left for his aunt and uncle's house. This is what he believes happened to Zachary.
I can only speculate what the circumstances or the scenarios that could have happened. Of course, there could have been foul play involved. If Zachary, somewhere on the road there, ran into a circumstance where ran into foul play, that's always an option. I mean, it happens everywhere we go. I mean, we live in this kind of world. Zachary could have made a decision to make a change in lifestyle, just disappear and go off and do his own life somewhere else without his family, without his friends. Really, the only two things that I could think of that could be the two possible scenarios. Eventually, he wanted to be independent and run his own business. I think he worked with, you know, there at the mission was a good experience for him. I don't think he felt like he really wanted to just be in the 9-to-5 drudgery every day, because he liked so much to go out and help other people. He liked his handyman work, his skills and his trades that he acquired. I just think Zachary just wanted to be a person that could be a benefit to the community and to the people around him. Of course, he's a young man and he hadn't really figured out what his career path would be. But I could see him, that would be the place he would be the happiest, is helping people around him.
So what happened to Zachary Wilkes on May 24th, 2017? Did he take the route he had driven so many times before? Was he met with foul play while driving? Could he have stopped to help a stranded motorist and ran into trouble? Is there a chance he decided to leave and start a new life entirely? Could he have gotten into an accident and his car has never been recovered? At the time of his disappearance, Zachary Taylor Wilkes was 27 years old. He's approximately 5'10" tall and weighs about 180 pounds. He has brown hair and hazel eyes. He has a rose tattoo on his right leg. Zachary is in need of life-sustaining medication and may be in need of medical treatment. If you have any information about the disappearance of Zachary Wilkes, please call the Lompoc Police Department at 805-736-2341. You can follow Zachary's story on social media at Find Zachary Wilkes.
I mean, the only place that he would go would be, that I know of, that he knew of, would be to go to Cabo, which is where his uncle lives, and that was the uncle he was going to see, so it makes zero sense that he would, I mean, he's pretty much unfamiliar with anything else. You try to think of everything you know to think about, but then lots of things to think about. All of his friends were in our town. He had a friend here and there, the couple of friends that I knew that were out of the area. I mean, we were on them day one. We've been, you know, communicating since that day to try to, you know, have you heard from him? Have you seen him? You know, what can you do? What can we do? Like I said, the people that I know just aren't, they haven't seen him. And I just don't think they have no reason to lie about it. I mean, there's just nothing to gain.
Even though time goes by, you know, there's still things that are unanswered. For example, he has a car is missing. Okay, you would think you would find an automobile somewhere. Even though, whatever the situation, you would find an automobile. But I think we just need a heightened awareness, and that's what I feel. I don't want this to just die down and go away because it's unresolved. I think that would be my plea to you and what you're doing in your podcast. is to help us keep the awareness up, and something will, at some point, something will come to light, and we'll find out what happened to Zachary.
The one thing that I have learned through this, and I've just had to, is you can never give up. Not that people do, but people get, it's exhausting and it's heartbreaking, and you have to keep kicking every single rock. I mean, all the time. That was the hardest thing for me to do. I was part of groups, and I listened to podcasts, and I talked to people, and I do interviews, and all of that is just what keeps you going, and you have to just keep going, because it's honestly nobody else is going to do it. And that's heartbreaking, because you want everybody to care as much as you do, and they just don't.
This week, we're going to share an update on Zachary's story with you. You heard in the original episode that Zachary had planned to go visit his uncle in Las Vegas and was going to be working as well as catching up with his extended family members. The route Zachary planned to take was relatively rural, from his home in southeastern California through the desert to Las Vegas, Nevada. Zachary would never know how treacherous this route was, and that he would not make it safely to his uncle's home. At the time we originally aired Zachary's story, his family and loved ones didn't know what to think. Zachary's phone had last sent a ping along the planned route, but there was no other evidence that he'd been there. In a twist that deepened the mystery further, his cell phone had died or was shut off after the last ping, and was also missing. It seemed as though he had simply vanished after that one last clue from the cell phone ping. Had he taken a detour after his phone had shut off? Did he choose to disappear and start over? We didn't have many answers to these questions at the time, and neither did his family members, who were still desperately searching for Zachary. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 277 of The Vanished, an update on Zachary Wilkes' story. Zachary's story touched so many of you when we originally aired his episode almost 2 years ago. Since that time, Zachary's case has had several developments and ultimately a tragic ending. His mom, Liz, graciously spoke with us again last winter and gave us an update. When we spoke with her, we asked her to share with us where things stood when the podcast aired in the summer of 2019.
As of March 2019, we were pretty much in a holding pattern. We were still following up on every lead. Law enforcement at that point hadn't done a whole lot. Again, they could only be as supportive as they could be, but they kept stating that he was an adult, and all they could do when they found him was tell him that he'd been reporting as a missing person. So that continued until early October. And then in early October, the story escalated rather quickly. They found the car, and that was just really hard, because we had gotten it from the Lompoc Police Department and the police chaplain, who actually happens to be our pastor at our church back home. So that was just really hard. We had our youngest boy here with us, and everybody was here, but we had found the car, but they hadn't found any personal belongings or any bones. There was basically nothing. It just the car. We had the car towed, and at the same time, they put out a search and rescue to see what they could find, you know, if they could find any of the belongings that were not, like, in the car. There was pancake mix still in the car. His pillow was jimmied in the seat. The trunk was full of his stuff, That was what we knew in early October.
Zachary's car was found crashed along Highway 166 in Kern County, California, not far from his last phone ping. Somehow, it had gone unnoticed or well concealed for more than 2 years. But when police responded to the scene, they didn't find Zachary's remains inside the vehicle. Even though Zachary's car had been found, Liz wasn't getting any additional support from law enforcement. When it seemed like the mystery had only taken another bizarre twist, law enforcement didn't appear to be any more invested in finding him. Additionally, Liz felt so much guilt that her family's own search efforts had missed Zachary's car. When they had searched close to where his phone had last pinged, we asked Liz to tell us about that.
The sheriffs are embarrassed because they supposedly flew over that area. I've dealt with a lot of excuses. I just have to say, and I know I've said this before, but it's like, it is one of the most difficult things, being a parent of a missing adult. You have nothing. You have no standing. How did we miss the car when we did the search? It was on the path that we searched. So a tremendous amount of guilt. Did we miss him? How did we miss him? And a lot of heartbreak. Based on where we flew the drone, and we were not with the drone operator the entire time, but we talked about, you know, where we were going to go. We went out and spotted him on the trail. We knew he was out there. And the community that we're from, pretty small. And so actually one of the young men that was on the search team was like, we're not going to stop looking and we're not going to quit until we find him, because they had been friends. So me and my family were convinced that we were in that area. We're not sure how we missed it. We made an incorrect guess on the ping. We always spent more time on the front end of the ping because we thought, okay, we did the time and he drove at this speed. And, you know, we timed it out. We drove it. And we thought the ping was when he first entered the cell tower range. But in fact, his car was found just outside of the end of the cell tower ping. So we were on the wrong side most of the time. I still don't know how it was missed. That's just something that I can't quite get my head around.
When Zachary's car was recovered in October of 2019, there was still no sign of Zachary. His car was badly damaged, and it seemed unlikely that he would have survived such a terrible accident. But he was nowhere to be found, leaving Zachary's family feeling like they'd made one small step in finding out what had happened to him, but with even more questions than before. Liz told us more about why they believe it took so long for someone to discover the car.
Well, they can't say how it was hidden at that day, but they can say how it was hidden when they pulled it out. It was fully covered by tumbleweeds. And because the car had gotten near some barbed wire, the tumbleweeds were collecting on it. It was towed. The tow truck company took it to the California Highway Patrol, and they did their evaluation and didn't find anything. They found like the stuff he had packed that hadn't been dragged off by rodents or destroyed, but the area had flooded out a couple of times, and so they didn't find anything.
Finding Zachary's car but no sign of Zachary himself only deepened the mystery about where he had gone. His car was found crashed in a deeply isolated area of the desert, where walking somewhere would have been impossible. And there was nothing that indicated or suggested that Zachary was driven in tandem with someone else. His family lived with these questions for several months, and they were trying to determine if the car could yield any information about what had happened before, during, and after the accident.
It was pretty messy. And what was the hardest is we didn't know who owned the case. So when my youngest son reported him missing, he went to the sheriff. And the sheriff is like, no, you need to go to the police department within your city. And we're like, okay, you know, that doesn't make sense, but okay. So then we give it to the police department and they put their bolo out. So there was a 911 call about it the weekend before they found the car. There were some tweakers, and that's the police's word, not mine, that called in that they had found this car, flipped over, and gave them the location. So it was basically these people that were stripping the car for parts found the car and called it in. So then they run the car. So at this point, Lompoc PD has it. And worse than that, it's on the county line. So it's not only Santa Barbara County, it's also Ventura County. So now we have three different police agencies that have the car. Then they end up turning it over to Kern County. I had nobody to call. I don't want to bash the police, but it's just like, just going back to the whole thing, it's like, who owns the case? I don't know. You know, I don't think had it been for my small town and my pastor being the chaplain, the pastor and I had been communicating just a couple weeks before that. And so he was keenly engaged with that. He knew where things were, but not everybody has that luxury. And we definitely did, and a small town. I can't even imagine going through this in a big town or with people that don't have an interest. Again, so they didn't take the car back to our town. They took him to another town. And my brother-in-law had a conversation with the tow truck driver. He had heard through the CHP that they didn't feel anybody was else involved. He just was going around this particular curve and went airborne. There's no railing. There's no protection. There's nothing but the way the car was upside down. There were no skid marks. Now, mind you, I mean, we were driving, and not only us, but the police were driving 3 days after the accident. So there would have been tracks, but nobody found any tracks that were skid marks or brakes. And, you know, my boys were saying, you know, just based on the car, that he flipped over one time, landed on the top. And by the distance and the, you know, I don't know how you do trajectory personally, but the trajectory was that it was just him by himself. But I think my brother-in-law and Zachary's two brothers went to get what they could out of the car and then to sign over the car to the state. Having my brother-in-law, who had been in the police department, describe what he could with looking on the car, he died almost instantly. He missed the curve, and it looked like he just creamed off the curve.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Zachary's family continued to grapple with their questions and figure out what their next plan of action was. Though it hadn't been publicized, Several bones that were thought to be human remains had been found, not far from the site of the accident, in the weeks after Zachary's vehicle was recovered.
Sometime around the second week of November, we found out that they had found two bones. They called in a forensic anthropologist, and during her review, she found that one bone was human and one bone was animal. And my husband and I had done DNA swabs, and so they had to send that off to Namus, and Namus did the review, and they notified us that just over 1,000 days missing, they had identified Zachary's DNA in a cheekbone that they found down the ravine from where the car was. I finally, got a call from the coroner, and after I lost my mind, because I'm just like, I don't know what to do. At that point, the Lompoc police person told me something that he shouldn't have told me. He just said it, that one bone was a human bone and one bone was an animal bone. Then I call and talk to the coroner, and she's just like, we haven't disclosed any of that information. We haven't told anybody. I told her how I knew, and then several months happened, and I just kind of like was just getting very frustrated because I didn't know who to call. And so I finally called the coroner back, and she's like, I can't tell you this. I don't have authority. And I'm like, well, just tell me somebody that I can talk to who owns this case. And that was the most frustrating part because nobody owned it. I'd call the Lompoc PD person. He didn't know. He couldn't tell me anything. He'd say, call Kern County. I'd call Kern County. They'd say the Highway Patrol have it. So the fact that they reported that there was and there wasn't, and it sort of just depended on who you talked to. It was horrible. That part of it was miserable. I had some sheriff person call me back who does the Back Hills research and serves warrants and things like that. And he's just like, oh yeah, there are all these animals and the fact that they eat any, and I'm just like, one, thank you for being truthful with me. And I felt horrible. I just felt that they were wrong. One little bone, they can't diminish my Zachary to one little bone. And that's what it felt like. It was kind of like, and then I'm like, are you going to go back and look for more? And they're like, no. A tremendous amount of disappointment, a tremendous amount of heartbreak. In so many ways, there were still no answers. And I think that's the hardest part, because even 10 months later, I still go, was he just being dumb and driving too fast? How did we miss the car when we did the search? It was on the path that we searched. So a tremendous amount of guilt. Did we miss him? How did we miss him? And a lot of heartbreak for what you're never going to have again. It's like, I could have been a grandma. I could have been a grandma to one of Zachary's children, or how am I going to have mashed potatoes ever again without Zachary? And a lot of heartbreak, because you're just kind of, all your hopes are dashed. It's like, oh, and then a lot of denial. It's like, oh, they only found one bone. It's such a little thing. How do they know? And then not understanding I don't necessarily understand the whole DNA of chemistry, but, they made a mistake. So at getting even just a little bit of guesses, or to their best ability, or this is what they think, or this is what they feel, that felt better, because I was able to go, okay, if it happened, it happened that very night, I think. And, the car was a pancake. So, maybe he didn't for a long time. Just really sad and just honestly guilt. If we had found him that night or the next day, would it have been any better? Would we have different results, or did it not matter?
For some, it may seem as though Zachary's case remains unresolved. For others, including families with actively missing loved ones, the conclusion to this story may be somewhat enviable. Zachary's family has an ending, and so many families we speak to just dream of having that ending. But when we talked to Liz, she told us that the question of considering Zachary's case resolved when they only have a small portion of his body is one that's difficult to answer.
And in this particular incident, we've actually gone through three very distinct mourning periods. When he disappeared, that was one. When they found the car, that was two. But then in reality, I've only known since February 26th, the end result. I've literally done this 3 times in very, very distinct ways, and they all suck. It doesn't ever get better. It changes. It's a different feeling, but unless you're right there as it happens, there's always going to be questions because you don't know. Even what did he feel? You're talking about as a parent, you have this connection with your child that is marrow deep. It doesn't get any deeper. You can hear a cry and you're like, oh, that's not real. Oh, that's a fake in it. And you can see a twinkle in the eye and like you're like, who did you meet? Why are you so happy? You see things that they don't even, they think they're sly and they're hiding it from you, but you see it. So when you don't know things about how your child ended up, those questions are hard. They're really hard and they don't go away. And does having a hole exactly make it any more real, make it any more less? He's gone either way. Yes, somebody might have done something, yes, but most of the evidence leads to he was driving too fast and went off curve. And so maybe I'm just resolved to that solution. Somebody could have done something and somebody has out there and that could be resolved. Does it change me? Does it change my life? He's still not here. Yes, I can help somebody not get hurt by somebody else again. But when nothing leads to that, and then he's in a ravine that leads to a riverbed that leads to the ocean. I mean, I'm sure they could find something else, but I don't know if they'd find all of him.
Like many other families who have had partial resolutions in the disappearance of their loved ones, Liz and Zachary's other family members felt as though they were in sort of a limbo when they realized that they would likely never have all of Zachary's remains in one place where they could go to grieve.
So we wanted to have a memorial early last spring, March, April, and then the pandemic hit. And I talked with the boys, and we were just kind of like, well, we're coming home. We can bring Zachary. We can do something, even though, you know, California's still shut down. But we can do something. We can do something smaller. And I think in their heads, it's kind of like, it's already done. We've dealt with this in our own kind of way. My oldest loves to tell me, Mom, I wish you'd be happy again someday. I don't think you ever get closer. Like I said, there's so many questions that we don't have answers to, that we'll never have answers to, that you'll wonder forever. You absolutely will wonder forever.
Liz also acknowledges the importance of the fact that everyone grieves differently, and she wants to ensure that her family has the space to do that in their own way.
I'm definitely the active griever, if that makes sense. You know, it's like I was the one who was posting face groups and I'm the one who's I'm going to keep kicking rocks and I'm going to keep. But we're all tore up and in very different ways, but just we just deal with it differently. I think the boys are obviously more stoic, but they have such funny and unique memories of their brother. They're quick to share it and they're quick to do that. I think David he's very much the typical man. He's very stoic and, you know, he doesn't cry a lot and doesn't talk a lot about it. We talk a lot more about baby Zachary or 2-year-old Zachary than we do about Zachary the man, because it just makes it a little less raw, if that makes sense, because that little baby is easier to not be hurt over, because I guess it's further distance. But we all realize that, and this is something we talk about, it just like I said earlier about never going to be a grandma. When that's what you want to be, that's a big, oh no. It's the things that we're going to miss out on. And that's, we talk about that. Life was too short. His life was too short. It's not easy on anybody.
Liz says that it's important to her family to celebrate Zachary's life in an event where friends and family can come together once it's safe to gather again. And that so many people have reached out to her to share their own personal stories about Zachary.
And I had one young woman reach out to me who has moved to Colorado. And she's like, I bought Zachary a forest. And she's just like, you know, I thanked her for it. And she's like, no, thank you for having my best friend. And it's these young people, his friends that are his age, that just reach out on a daily basis. I saw this. I wanted you to know about that. You know, I miss him and I love him. And I found this picture of this funny story. And it's not, you know, yeah, we're his family, but he was more than just ours. And I mean, I knew he was influential in people's lives. And I knew that my boy had an amazing heart, that you know, he would give somebody the shirt off his back. And I mean, it's like 75-year-old women that fix the plumbing in their bathroom. You know, he was genuine and he was loved. And again, it's just not his family that miss him. Our community misses him. I took up communication with a friend of his maybe about 6 weeks ago, and they had lost track of each other. And he's just like, I just found out. I just heard. And for the last 6 weeks, we've been talking pretty much daily about just life and Zachary and, you know, this quirky story and that silliness and what we remember and what we loved and just all of that. That, if anything, if it's intensified, if not, now we have people, it's funny, people are like going through their family pictures and all of a sudden they'd be like, wait, how did Zachary have Christmas at your house? He was at my house. But it's like, yeah, he'd make the rounds. He'd be at two or three different Christmases. And you don't get a lot of those in life. You know, a lot of people don't have unconditional friends. And he was a lot of people's unconditional friend. And that is definitely missed. Definitely missed. He had no halo. He was real, but he was good. A lot of people in life aren't good. He was good. He's one in a million. He will forever be missed.
In the end, Zachary's disappearance ended with the calls, notifications, and answers that no parent wants to hear about their child, and no brother or sister wants to hear about their sibling. Parents aren't supposed to bury their children, and in the horrible situations in which they do, they shouldn't have to resign themselves to the idea that they will never have all of their child's remains. But as you heard from Liz, she and her family have done a remarkable job coming to terms with the new normal that they never wanted to have. They've come to the realization that having all of Zachary's remains wouldn't bring him back to life, any more than just having a few, and that the celebration of his life and preserving those memories of his joy and kindness are what's most important to them.
There's so much guilt. This is not all about me, but this is how I my head works. Just like, you know, why didn't I tell him not to go so late? Why didn't I, when he was 16 and started driving, why didn't I encourage him to drive slower? Why didn't we find him on that first night? Was the car okay? We will never know. We have no way of ever knowing. There are people that do what you do, but in very different formats. And this is just coming from somebody who's been through this not that long ago. It's things like you that give hope to people. You're somebody who cares enough. One, people really get tired of hearing our stories. This is a general statement. I could see the exhaustion in my friends. I mean, they love me, they care about me, but there's other things. And the second thing is you give us an outlet that gives us an outlet. You give us an outlet, but we also know that I'm just not talking to you, that you're going to convey it somewhere else, somehow else. And that's huge. That's huge when you're in the middle of this, because again, it's like not one person in this entire world has my exact story, because it's my story. I would share with other parents, one, don't ever give up. Don't ever let anybody tell you no. And there's always somebody that's above somebody. This is the love of your child or your friend or your relative. Just because it doesn't fall within the rules or just because that's not how they normally do it, doesn't mean that you can't push. And the other thing that I would do, and I never did, and I would hope that, don't ever think any idea is too crazy, because you just don't know. And you don't know what you find, and you don't know who you will come across. I have been through this adventure, this horrible, horrible adventure our family has taken. I have connected with people that I still talk to. And you know what? There's a young man that disappeared on the same day that Zachary did. And I communicate with his mom, and it's just like, she still doesn't know where her boy is. And it's like, it's okay to have bad days, but you can never give up and you can never not turn that leaf. You have to turn that leaf.
That brings us to the end of episode 277. I would like to thank Liz for coming back and giving us an update. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Louisiana. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.